Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice and welcome to Two Fat Expats. Why are we fat? Because we want you to live a fat expat life. This podcast is all about filling your expat life up to the brim with fat ideas. Now, this podcast is also about our fabulous sponsors, the Shangri-La Dubai. Have you been there? I'm heading there this weekend, but more on that later. Today, we're doing our first ever part two. We're back talking about adult TCKs, or third culture adults. Ever wondered what happens to your third culture kids when they grow up? Well, you're about to find out. So before we get started, I'm going to ask the lovely Nikki Moffat to come and join us from Hamburg, Germany. I'm here in Doha. Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Now, you've been away, haven't you?
I was away. We went to the very, very, very green UK, or the country Devon, for Easter weekend. And it was just like being in a TV show in the English countryside.
Did you do long walks across the moors or the? Oh no, that's more Scotland, isn't it? What do you do? Long walks.
You tramp. You go tramping everywhere. So we did. We walked twice a day to different locations and met many, many people doing the same thing. It was very, very. It was really just like being in a TV show. You know how when you go to New York, you feel like you're in a movie all the time.
Yes.
Because you recognize everything. Well, it was just like being in one of those TV shows. It felt exactly the same way.
So are you telling me that this is a cultural thing, or do you think this is just the people you were staying with?
Well, I think English people who live in a 15th century farmhouse with two cats, two dogs and 10 chickens.
Oh my God.
Down a one-lane road, or many one-lane roads, with hedges high on both sides so you can't see cars coming the other way. I think they're pretty safe to say they're going to be going walking every day.
Wow. Oh, that must have been amazing. And as you're telling me this, I'm looking out my window across at the rubble and stones and rocks and dust and sand of the Middle East. Now, Nikki, we are back doing part two of what we started last week, our investigation, I guess, into adult TCKs. So yesterday, I put a little note up on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases and a Beagle Facebook page because after our chat last week, Nikki, like we were talking about third culture kids and what happens when they grow up to be adults, and I had all four of my children in the car with me and I was talking about what we were doing in the podcast, and I said to my eldest, because she's home here at the moment from boarding school, and I said, oh, you know, I learned something new today. I've learned that there's a name for people like you. And she was like, oh, yes. I said, oh, you know, they call third culture kids who return back to their passport country, they call them hidden immigrants because maybe they may look and sound and seem the same, but they're not the same because they've lived very different lives. And there was sort of this communal eye roll from all four of my children. And I was like, what? And their take on it was, you know, why do all you old people need these labels? Like, what is wrong with you that you guys all need to put this in a box to explain it? So I posed the question on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases page, which I knew was going to get me in trouble because, Nikki, we now live in an expat world where there are conferences that are held to discuss our expat lives, and there are coaches and counsellors and therapists that all write books and talk about our expat lives. And so asking the question, you know, has it all got too serious and are we overthinking it, was always going to raise some issues. And you said, Nikki, in your comment, I do have an opinion on this, Kirsty, but I will talk to you about it in the podcast. So tell me, what is your opinion on this?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say that I don't think you got in trouble with that post at all. I think a lot of people jumped on board and said, yes, I agree with you, or I agree with your children, or talked about the fact that young people are so hip and happening and world view people, as you yourself said, you know, that they're global citizens, so they don't think of themselves as different. So I don't think there were really any sort of disagreeing commentary on that post, was there?
No, I don't think there was. I haven't checked it this morning. I know, look, there were people that definitely said, and it was interesting, people I know who had teenagers said, no, teenagers see the world differently than we do. They, you know, now with people who are transgender and what people identify themselves as and whatever, they've learnt that you just don't put people in boxes in that same way. Do you know that it's not? And excuse me if anyone can hear the noise in the background. I'm literally living surrounded by a construction site at the moment. But yeah, and then there were others that said they found it very comforting to know that there was a name for what they were. But yeah, there were a number of people that sort of said, yeah, they thought it had all got a little bit serious.
Yeah, so my view is that, and what I think about labels in general, is that they're not for the people that are in that situation. They're for the people that aren't in the situation. They're to try and help other people understand you, not to help you understand yourself, because you know who you are. Mm. So I think it's great to say, yeah, no one needs a label. Let's all go into the world and accept people for who they are. But the facts, sadly or not, are the older we get, the more our own view of the world comes from our understanding of it. Our own experiences and biases shape how we view the world and sort of how we see other people. So when we come across things we don't understand, we sometimes need a reference point. A label helps us in that situation. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying that kind of not from the view of talking about expats. I'm saying that from the view of talking about people like my son, who has several labels that he doesn't need. But sometimes people need them to understand him or to help him in certain situations. That's the way I look at labels.
Yeah, and I understand your point there. And I think that gives me more clarity too in what I'm trying to say, in that I wonder, now that people have made a business out of being expats, do you know that there are people who coach and counsel and write books and whatever, it is in their favour for us all to talk about the drama associated with being an expat. Now, when you talk about your son, that's a legitimate discussion to be had, right? And there's a reason for that. But I think when we're talking about third culture kids, and the thought and the self-help groups and the, some might even say the circle jerk that goes around, the constant discussion, like, does it need to be that heavy? And I don't know. And I guess I had this little epiphany last night of, you know, we talked last week about how my husband just doesn't identify with any of it. He just says, yeah, I was a third culture kid, but we moved back and, you know, life went on and da-da-da-da-da. And I realise now it's because I'm an easy expat. Do you know, I haven't had a tough expat life. I've had a middle class expat experience. And so for me, no, it's not tough. Because, you know, we've had grandparents at home. We've been able to constantly go back and forth. I haven't lost a country. I haven't lost my roots. Do you know, I've had a home base. It's been an easy expat experience. I have nothing to complain about. Whereas perhaps if I was from Syria or I was someone who had relocated to Qatar and was never going to be seen as Qatari but was never going to be able to return to my home, you know, perhaps if I was Palestinian, then yes, there would be massive confusion. Maybe if I was an expat from China who had left my family at home and I was working on a building site here, well, yeah, I would maybe see the need to have some help. Do you know, I think the thing I struggle with is it all seems very first world problem.
Yes, and I hear you. And even what I'm saying about it is influenced by my own biases, by seeing that labels in some situations can help. So I totally agree with you. But I think it's kind of like mental health. So in that some people go through an experience and they need no help at all and they're easily able to cope because that's their coping skills, that's their life experiences, that's their support base. And some people go through the same experience and do need help.
Yes.
So, and regardless of first world, second world, and I certainly acknowledge that there are people in very difficult situations that, that might need it. But that, but as you say, that's not really who this is necessarily all targeted at.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems to be targeted at sort of the mainstream. But I think that those things are there. They're good for people if they need them.
Yes.
So including repatriation counselling in your contract, it's a good thing to negotiate in. You know, maybe you don't need it, but maybe one of your children struggles on repatriation and so it would be perfect to have it there. So it was a good idea to have it in.
Yes.
It's kind of like insurance, I guess. That's kind of my view.
yeah. And do you know what, Nikki? I totally agree. I'm just cautious of this constant conversation of no one understands me and my life is so hard. Like sometimes I want to scream, just get a grip.
And yes, I think that's very fair. And I totally understand where you're coming from. And I had a conversation with somebody, you know, when I was in Amsterdam, and she has been raised a third culture kid and now is living her life as an expat adult, and said, I'm just so over it. I'm so over expat. I'm so over anything. I'm just living my life. I just don't want to talk about that stuff. I just want to live my life, make my friends and raise my kids.
Was that my friend Erica?
That was your friend Erica.
I love it. See, I love it. And this is probably why she's my friend Erica. This is why I love it. Yes.
I didn't want to out her, but she's probably not listening because it's got the word expat in the title.
Yes. And I can totally see, I can hear her saying that, and I can totally see why, because yeah, that's the whole thing. Because, you know, you would think if you read and listened and, you know, were on all of the sites and doing all of that, you know, really, Erica should be in a constant state of crisis because she is an expat child who became an expat adult who had expat children. But she's not. You look at Erica and she's a really well-balanced, together person. And you know, maybe that's it, Nikki. Maybe you've just raised something really good, is that I am surrounded by these women that have just got on with their lives and are doing it. And I just worry that there's so much. We've swung right from one side to the other.
And yes, and I hear you and I acknowledge it. I don't think we're that different. I just think we're coming at it from different sides, which I say this to my husband all the time. We're saying the same thing, but in different ways. He says, you're not saying the same thing as me at all. I said, yes, I am. I mean, I have had friends who've repatriated who have had serious things happen to them because of their ability or not to deal with a repatriation situation. So I know that sometimes it is very real and they really do need help.
Yes.
And so I think we shouldn't dismiss it out of hand, but we should say, you know, like everything in life, moderation.
Yeah.
Moderation.
And, you know, we had that, Nikki, when I wrote that comment, there were a number of people that wrote, look, I think expats just have to realise that when they get home, nobody cares. They're not special. Nobody cares what you've done, which is, you know, we hear this all the time, that that's the hardest thing about repatriation is that, you know, you get to the school gate and nobody wants to hear where you're from or where you've lived or what you've done. But maybe, yeah, we all just have to be prepared and adult about this. That's life.
But when you're a kid, you don't have that choice. Your parents just take you. So maybe we should listen to some more kids who were taken by their parents on a great big adventure.
Brilliant segue. Let's do that. Okay, so who am I listening to first?
So first you're going to listen to Christine.
This is Christine calling from Doha, Qatar, and I have to admit that it's the third time that I click on record and I'm suffering from some serious stage fright talking into my computer. But you were looking for some feedback from adults who had been expat children. Since I'm 47, I figure I qualify as an adult. And I did, in fact, move from Canada, my home country, to Venezuela when I was 7 years old. And I stayed there until I was a young teen. And it definitely shaped my life in some really distinct ways. And I'm probably in many of the same ways that you'll hear from all of your listeners. I think I've definitely always longed for home, but never really felt that I belonged anywhere. I think I've always known that I wouldn't be happy unless I had travel as a part of my life. And I think it's made me extremely adaptable. You know, I'm trial insensitive. I've developed a lot of patience as an expat. And I think I've been able to walk away from material things quite easily and to convince myself that the people left behind are just a phone call away.
Oh, that was fantastic. And I think it was Christine who said in one of the comments about, because she's Canadian but hadn't lived there, you know, she didn't know how to skate. And yeah. This is a huge thing in Canada. And, you know, I lived in Canada for 4 years, and when I moved here, I would meet a lot of people that would say, I'm Canadian, and they were Canadian, but maybe they had grown up, you know, in Lebanon or, you know, somewhere else, and they'd emigrated to Canada. And this conversation about skating is a really big thing because you're not really seen as Canadian unless you can skate. Because you haven't, that means you haven't grown up or lived it or understand it, you know. It's quite funny. But, yeah, that was brilliant. Love, Christine. So now we're listening to Emma.
Emma.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Emma. I'm British. I live in Doha. I'm an ATCK, even though I probably don't identify as one, but that is what I am. I lived in the States until I was 6. Moved to England, moved to Australia when I was 10, moved back to England, moved to South America when I was 18, moved back to England, moved back to South America when I was 21. So coming from all over, really. Definitely gave me the travel bug since I'm now on my second expat assignment. My husband's also a third culture kid in a similar way to me, so it's fairly inevitable that was how it would all pan out, especially when we both got jobs working for multinational companies and having a competition to see who could get moved first, and he won. My childhood expat experiences have definitely shaped how I feel about roots versus nomadic experiences. We're a bit nomadic, I suppose, but we do go back to the UK. I think I've always felt like I didn't know how I'd feel about it from my children's perspective, how I'd feel if the cultural things that we take for granted were something they didn't have or know or display or share with us. So we were quite open with our company about wanting to move around while the kids were still young, but that we would want to move home when they were about 11 to start secondary school, and felt quite strongly about this. I think tween and teen years can be quite critical in terms of development and needing stability, and I've never really understood the decision to go down the boarding school route. Probably carried that feeling with me till we got here and I met more and more people with older kids here, some of whom are in school in Doha, some of whom have gone to boarding school or back at home. And I'm not saying that would definitely change our plans, but it's definitely made me think about how we could be more flexible and open to the opportunities that become available at the time that we're making the decisions. I'd really like to think that this generation of third culture kids are growing up to be much more open and accepting of differences between cultures and religions and just between people, really, in general. I hope they're more friendly to newcomers and outsiders, and I hope we're giving them experiences that we could only have ever dreamed of, and opening their eyes to all that's possible in the world and in their futures. And I think as parents, we're always focused on the things that make us feel guilty, you know, the things that we're doing to screw our kids up in this unstable and fluid lifestyle that we're giving them. And I'm sure we all worry that they'll never be able to have solid, long-lasting relationships because they've been scarred by all the goodbyes and things. But I had a big light bulb moment recently when I read a really interesting article, which was a letter from an expat dad to his kids. It made me remember all the good sides of what expat life is offering them. And the best thing was it made me realise that home isn't just bricks and mortar. It's where the people you love are. And stability doesn't mean that it's got to be geographical.
Oh, my God, that was brilliant, wasn't it? Oh, there's so many things. Okay, so I was Emma, definitely. And, you know, really.
So was I.
Yeah, I was Emma, and really thought I had to get the kids back by a certain period of time because I wanted them to have those things and whatever. And, you know, and of course we moved. And, you know, my daughter didn't end up going back to Australia until she was 15 and a half, which I'm very happy with. You know, I think that was just the right balance for me, which is hysterical when you think that I probably thought we should have been back there by the time she was 8. And that she's here right now, do you know, and that life hasn't stopped and that her life is so full now from boarding school. When I gave myself so much grief, you know, I've written lots about this and lots about, you know, that expat existence and kids leaving. And I thought everything Emma said was absolutely bang on. You know, it's fascinating with Emma because I have met Emma and she said she'd never thought it that she was a third culture kid until recently. And then she sort of thought, oh, yeah, I guess I am too, because, yeah, I guess we did do this and we did do that, which totally sums up everything we've talked about, Nikki, with labels, is that she was going through life quite happily until someone pointed out to her that that was her label, that that's what she was. But, yeah, I thought everything she said was incredibly insightful, and I hope for all those things as well that that's what we've given our children with those moves. And I thought she was fascinating.
Okay, so next is a big one. It's Ruth Van Rieken. Now, despite what we've said about labels, Ruth Van Rieken is a trailblazer in the third culture kid movement. She was a third culture kid, and she was one of the founding members of the Families in Global Transition movement and conference. And that's obviously one of the biggest, well, if not the biggest conference that goes around these days that deals with helping people in this situation. Now, I feel a little bit like we've been anti that, but we're not anti it. We're just saying moderation.
Yeah. And look, I think we really need to point out too, it's not anti that. I think if there's anyone that's written 100,000 gazillion words about expat life, it's me, right? I can't.
Yes.
I have spent the last 7 years of my life writing solely about the expat existence. So it's not that I don't feel that we should recognise these things. I just think maybe we've got to be careful to find the balance. But yes, I'm busting to listen to Ruth. So
okay.
I'm going to press play.
Go.
This is Ruth Van Rieken. I grew up as a third culture kid in Kano, Nigeria, where I was also born. I lived there till I was 13, with only two trips back to the United States in that time. For me, growing up in that place was wonderful. It was as normal as growing up in Chicago had been for my mother. It was the world I knew, interacting with people of different languages, different skin colors, different nationalities. It was just part of life. It was a part I loved. I loved the fact that I could climb trees, that I could go to market. All these things were the world I knew, and to me, life was very normal. As I think many people understand after they grow up, we were developing skill sets that we didn't know because it was so normal. We didn't understand that everybody didn't go back and forth between cultures. So for me, the main part where the challenge came was when I came back to the United States at the age of 13. And at that point, of course, I, for the first time, was living in a world that I was supposed to be from and thought I was from. So when I was in Nigeria, if I was different, it was fine because I was from America and I could still be friends. So that was the challenge. It wasn't my life in Nigeria. It was the reentry. In time, I made my adjustment by not telling anybody I had lived overseas. And, of course, by now, I've come to terms with the fact that I have many homes and love life in lots of places. But I loved my childhood. I had 2 years of boarding school, and that was more difficult because I was away from my parents. But basically, for me, life was normal in Nigeria. My father had felt life was normal in Iran, which was then Persia. I raised my children in Liberia before there was a war, and it was a wonderful place. So I think when a family is close and there's interaction with the place and the people, it's a beautiful thing and a beautiful gift. And I wouldn't trade my life for anything. The joy that I have seen so many places and met so many people has been a gift I will treasure for the rest of my life, however long that still is.
Okay, so two trips home in 13 years.
Yeah. That's old school expatting right there.
Oh my gosh. I think it's even more than old school expatting. Like, I think old school expats maybe once a year went home, but like two trips in 13 years, that's almost like immigration.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, I hear. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's like we have really planted roots and locked in. And I mean, I'd love to talk to Ruth about, was it because they were spending all of their time traveling all over the world in their holidays? Do you know, like, her to only go home twice, because I have friends that have done that here. They moved here I want to say 6 years ago, and they've been home once, and they have spent all of their time going to different holiday destinations. But then when they moved here, their children were old enough to remember their home. Do you know, they moved here with probably a 10 and a 12-year-old. You know, now they have a 17-year-old. So, God, that is really... And you can understand that would... Because you would really lay your roots where you were. And
that is your home.
Yeah, that's your home.
I mean, she was born there.
Yes. And that's a lot to unpack. I can see that, you know, to then go off to boarding school after all that time, yeah, that would be incredible. Wow. That was really interesting.
A very interesting story. A very interesting lady, yes. There's lots more to be heard there, I think.
So Nikki Ruth's book is called Third Culture Kids Growing Up Among Worlds. And I think the second one she wrote is called Cross-Cultural Kids. But yes, I can see how she would have gone down that path, because you would have done a lot of soul searching.
That's a situation where you really would have needed some help to sort yourself out.
But I am fascinated by her story. I think that's really, really interesting. I'm still like 13 years, two trips home. Like, and even if one of those trips was in the first 5 years, you probably wouldn't even remember it.
Yes, could be true. That's true. And then she went to boarding school. So she didn't even go back with her family. I think then she went to boarding school.
So that
would be harsh.
Yeah.
Okay. Next is Antonia.
This is Antonia here, and your topic this week is the story of my life. I'm adult third culture kid. In actual fact, I'm a second generation third culture kid, and my children are third generation TCKs. I was born in Hong Kong and grew up mainly in Hong Kong, but also had periods in South Africa and Holland and briefly in England, which, although is my passport country, Britain, that is, doesn't feel like home, which is a very strange concept to many TCKs. Home is everywhere, wherever your heart happens to be. At any rate, my father also grew up abroad, and they both lived in Europe during the war. My father was in Britain, and my mother was at that time in Holland, where she worked in the underground, hiding young men from the Germans. After the war, my mother went and worked in Indonesia, and then in Japan before she ended up in Hong Kong. My father went via the Middle East working in Israel before he also ended up in Hong Kong, where they met and married. And then along came my brother and myself. We were brought up in Hong Kong and in South Africa, and had, at those days, you used to get home leave every 3 years. So we had extended stays in Europe, in both Holland and England. And then again, it was time for us to flee the nest. I went to Scotland to university, a country I'd never been to before. Very different from Hong Kong. And there I met my husband Ian, who, although Scottish, grew up in Australia and had come back to Scotland to go to university. We obviously fell in love and married, and we then started travelling on our own right. We've spent many years between Sweden, Germany, Belgium, Holland, Sweden, Belgium, and finally in Singapore. In the course of these years, we brought up two daughters who grew up in Europe, knowing that Britain was their passport country, but not feeling British. My life has been about travel from the beginning. Even in growing up, we traveled extensively around the world in all directions. In those days, although my father was working for Cathay Pacific, it was cheaper for us to travel by boat, which we did and enjoyed. I've had a very privileged time growing up traveling, and that came through to adult life, a desire to see the world, a desire not to stay in one place long. I have trouble staying anywhere for more than 2 years at a time. I've got to start packing my boxes and moving on again, even if it's just rearranging every room in the house. It seems part and parcel of the territory. I think that has come through to my own kids, who grew up in six different countries, speaking at least three languages each. They now are adult. They are now 33 and 25. Oops, 26. Now you've got my age too. Any rate, they too have traveled the world. My youngest chose to study in the States. My eldest actually studied in Britain, although we were living in Sweden. And both now are living and working in Singapore, and both intend to continue this journey of travel. I think what we have given them is confidence to do whatever they want to be. I think to be a TCK and live this life, you have to be resilient. You have to be adaptable. And my favorite saying is to be an expat spouse is to be a masochistic self-starter. Why? Because putting yourself through the pain of separation and moving on and starting all over again is hard. And you have to be able to do it yourself. You can't just sit and wait for someone to come to you. You have to embrace it. And yet, we love the life we lead. I don't think I could have known any other life. And for me, or us, the challenge now is, where will we retire? Because home for us is in so many places.
Oh my gosh, doesn't she have the most poetic way of speaking?
I know.
I think her next gig should be meditation, because I would listen to her for hours. Antonia is so, is that how calm you become, Nikki, after all those moves and children everywhere and their moves? And do you just become calm?
I think you might.
Yes.
I mean, I also think we're seeing a bit of a theme, because Antonia is not the first adult TCK that has left us a message that married another person from the same background.
Yes, yeah. And almost like they seek out these other TCKs so that they can go on the road together.
Finding their tribe, yes.
Yes.
And I thought that was interesting as well.
Do you know, I don't think, you know, obviously my husband didn't marry at TCK. I was raised in a tiny country town and my grandparents lived next door. So, but I do know that he made it very clear right from the start that that was what he intended to do, and would I be interested in doing that as well. So maybe that's just what happens with TCKs. They're partnering up with others that they think will go on the journey with them. Yes, because I noticed with Emma's, she said that her and her husband were almost in a race to see who would get relocated first.
That's right. Okay, so next we have Marilyn.
My name is Marilyn Gardner, and I'm an adult TCK. I feel like now you should say welcome, Marilyn, to our support group. I grew up in the country of Pakistan, and when I was 18 years old, I moved to the United States. I am American, but grew up in Pakistan. At the time, although there was some research out around third culture kids, it really wasn't mainstream, and so I just bungled my way through college, became a nurse. And as soon as I graduated, I thought, well, I have no idea who I am or what I'm going to do, so I want to go back to Pakistan. So I did, and I actually ended up getting deported. It's a long story there, so I won't go into it, but I ended up meeting my husband after the deportation, and we embarked on an overseas journey where we raised 5 children, first in Pakistan and then in the country of Egypt. So I really didn't need that adult third cultural kid community and that support until I moved to the United States. And I just thought, there's nothing in my life that has prepared me for this. So it's been a long journey. Writing has been absolutely pivotal for my journey. I write a blog called Communicating Across Boundaries. And through that, have ended up writing 2 books that really talk about belonging, talk about the third culture kid, the adult third culture kid. I would say the biggest joy is that ability to see perspectives, that ability to take a different perspective, see all different sides, and also to absolutely delight in difference, whether it's immigrants, refugees, ethnicity, whatever it is, that delight in difference. Thanks for hearing my story.
That delight in difference, that's beautiful.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. So we had this when we spoke to Dr. Sarah White about moving with teens, and she made the point that there has been a lot of negative things being written, and that she really felt that we needed to focus more on the positive. And I really agree. Like, like let's talk about what's great about this, not so much about what's going to mess you up. Because as we've seen and heard, there are all these amazing people out there that have used it as a strength.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, Andrea next.
My name is Andrea. I am an adult third culture kid. I am Australian. My husband is French, Egyptian, American. And our children are American, French, Australian. I grew up in Australia, Poland, France, and Denmark. And my husband grew up in Korea, Singapore, and the US and France. And I have worked over the last 15 years in the US, the Netherlands, France, and the UK. I think as an adult third culture kid, my husband and I, we've come from very different cultures, but we have some common values that I think you acquire by virtue of growing up all around the world. You become naturally curious, adaptable and resilient, very open-minded and very accepting of cultural differences. I think on the flip side of that, we fit in superficially everywhere. So I can walk into a shop in Paris or a supermarket in Sydney, or I can be walking down the street in Warsaw. People will ask me for directions, or they'll ask me if I work in the shop. I kind of visually, I just sort of seem to fit in everywhere, except maybe Cairo. But I think that the more we travel, and we do continue to travel, we seem to move every 5 or 6 years, that the friends that we grew up with who haven't embraced a similar lifestyle find us to be a little bit odd. I think the common ground that we had shared with them growing up wanes after a little while. They don't quite understand what could be driving you to keep moving around. And so we don't, I guess superficially we do fit in everywhere. But if you dig down, we feel that we don't necessarily always share the same vision of life and adventure as those friends of ours that have chosen not to move around. But we love our lives. Every year our lives look remarkably different from the year before. We never really know where we're going to be living. We never really know what kind of clothes we're going to be wearing. We don't know what our car's going to look like. But we do have each other, and we do know that we are a family that that loves adventure.
Oh my God, they just get better and better and better. I love they're so good. I love that we fit in superficially everywhere. I wonder if there was a collective nod around the world as people listen to this, you know, in the next week of, I definitely feel like that. Do you feel like that?
Yes, I feel like I can go to a lot of places and I fit in and people ask me stuff and I agree.
Yeah, because you do, you always, is it because when you're an expat, you arrive somewhere, you just know that you have to make it home and that it's going to be home, but it's not really home. But you're going to make it home.
Yeah, so you always try not to be a tourist. Do you know what I mean? Like when you go somewhere and visit as a tourist, you sort of go with a different mindset. You walk down the street looking at the street differently. You know, there's a whole different thing. So when you go somewhere to live, you're like, okay, this is what I'm doing. You know, I'm walking down the street. So I think it's different like that.
Yeah. Andrea's was brilliant. And that whole, when she said each year our life looks remarkably different than the year before, so, so true. And that the feeling of that the more they do it, the more the people from their original lives are confused about why they're doing what they're doing. Yeah, just so, so well said and well thought of and brilliant. And just, truly, the people that have, so all of these people are people that have just listened to the podcast and have gone to the website and left the messages, right? Or Nikki, did you go
That's
out?
That's correct.
Did you go out and seek some of these people in particular?
I sought people on Twitter. So I interacted with some people on Twitter and I interacted in a couple of different Facebook groups. But yes, I mean, I haven't chased anyone down individually and said, hey, can you drop us a message? This is just all from people volunteering their own stories, which I think is amazing.
Oh, they're so good. I just really want to say thank you to the people that have. Okay, so next is Miriam.
Oh, yes. You think it's been interesting? Now listen to Miriam.
Oh, really? Okay.
Hi, my name is Miriam Otimofiore, and I wanted to share my story of being an adult third culture kid. It's something that I actually didn't even know until recently. And when I did find out, it sort of blew my mind because it put a lot of the jigsaw, you know, pieces of the puzzle together. Knowing this now at the age of 34 as an adult and a mom to two kids and I'm now raising my own two TCKs, it makes perfect sense. The restlessness, the urge to move, the sort of feeling of belonging in both the East and the West, and sort of having a foot in both cultures, but not really feeling whole in either of them. I think these are all classic TCK experiences, which I've come to understand now, having heard from other TCKs. So my TCK journey, it showed to me that my experience as a Pakistani growing up in the United States as a young child always marked me as very different. We were always the ones who didn't belong, or we were the ones who were different, just different. And now raising my own two TCKs here in Dubai, I can see that they're having a very different experience from me. We share a lot of similarities in common, such as the whole adaptability to different cultures, the resilience factor, the learning to move and make new friends and start over again and again. But because they're growing up surrounded by other TCKs, for them, this experience is the norm. So their TCK experience is very different from mine. If you grow up as a TCK in an expat majority country, such as the UAE, where we are living right now, it's a completely different thing. I mean, if you ask any child in Dubai, like, define, you know, foreign, I mean, they'll have no clue what you mean or what you're referring to, because everybody here is from a different, you know, nationality. I think for me as a Pakistani child growing up in Bahrain and then the United States as a TCK, that was a very different experience. I always felt different because we were in the minority. We always had to sort of deal with our identities over a period of time. Whereas for my kids, they're part of an expat majority here in Dubai. Being a TCK is absolutely normal. And of course, our family is rather complex. I'm a Pakistani who grew up in the States and also in Pakistan. And I'm married to a man who is half Italian, half German. He's not a TCK, but he did grow up in this cross-cultural environment. And together, we've got four native languages at home. We're speaking Urdu, Italian, German, and English. And the kids, you know, my daughter was born in Singapore. She was learning Mandarin there. Now that's been replaced by Arabic in Dubai. And so for them, it's sort of the norm that you're father comes from one country or two countries and your mom comes from another but was raised in another, and you know, you all speak all these different languages together. So I think for them it's definitely more of a shock when they go back to either one of their passport countries, whether it's Pakistan or whether it's Germany, because then they realize that other kids there, they didn't grow up like them. And I think that's when their TCK-ness starts the show. I think it really depends on where you're living and where you do grow up, and that shapes a lot of your identity or your feeling of belonging. We were raised in the West, but we were always encouraged to feel Eastern. This whole conflict between East and West is still sort of continuing in my head because I've married someone from the West, and how do you raise them with, you know, is it Eastern values or what is it? Or is it just a mix of everything? So that's definitely something that we are looking to figure out as a family.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's it, isn't it? It's that whole how different you are made to feel and how that impacts the whole experience, isn't it? So
yeah, I thought that was so interesting.
So my children in the Middle East, she's absolutely right. If you were to ask them about what was foreign, they would look confused because everybody is foreign. You know, Qataris are in the minority here in Qatar, and the same with Emiratis. In Dubai, it's the majority are expats. So you're not wandering around looking different from everybody else because everybody, you know, it's such a mix. And is that it? Is it that Ruth's experience of, you know, living in Nigeria until she was 13, yes, she would have looked very different, I imagine, to the people around her? Or, you know, does that make a big difference to how we feel as third culture kids?
I think it might. And I just loved that it was the East versus West, because that was kind of the first person that's had that experience. So it makes me feel like I'm very vanilla.
Yes.
I'm just like, I got no problems. I got no issues.
And here we are. That's exactly what I was saying at the beginning. And that was my epiphany last night.
Yes.
Of, Kirsty, you're a middle-class white girl. Do you know, what have you got to complain about? Just stop it right now. And I guess that's been my issue, is like you said, that when we look at all the counselling and the courses and the people that are talking about it, a lot of them are also middle-class white women that are talking about it. And, you know, we've got the expat experience is so much bigger than that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, I've got one more that you didn't maybe see because it was called TCK, because this is from a millennial who calls herself TCK because she has a website, I think.
Hey, it's TCK, and thank you to Fat Expats for setting this up. I think it's a really awesome idea that you're sharing everyone's stories. I guess the first thing to do would be to dive into the condensed version of the chicken noodle soup that is my TCK story. All right, so first step was in Texas. We were there for 3 years, and then Louisiana for another 3 years. So I was 6 years old when we decided to, well, when my parents decided to move overseas. We went to Borneo, Malaysia. We were there for 4 years. And then we moved to Egypt for 3 years. And then we started bouncing back and forth between Egypt and Texas. So Egypt for 3 years. And then we moved back to Texas, thinking that both me and my brother were going to graduate there. But my dad got the opportunity 3.5 years in, after my brother had graduated, but I still had a year left, to move back to Egypt. At that point, it all became... my parents decided that I was old enough to have a say in leaving. So we had a huge discussion. We weighed pros and cons and really got together about it. But we did decide to move back overseas. So we moved back to Egypt. And crazily enough, 3 weeks later, the Arab Spring sprung. And we had to evacuate Egypt. And so we went back to Texas. And we spent several months there waiting for Egypt to calm down again and be able to live there again. So then we went back for my last year of school, and that's the end of the kid part of my story, I suppose. I returned to the U.S. for university and just finished that up. I've been here for 4.5 years, which is the longest I've ever been anywhere. Which is, of course, very overwhelming, but it's okay. I've reached the end of my self-assigned time. It's kind of funny, I reach those self-assigned times where I feel like I have to move, and I feel like a lot of TCKs are that way, but I also have my older brother who does not feel that way at all. He can just lay down roots and feel perfectly happy and fine. It's so strange how siblings can be totally opposites, but... gotta love him.
Oh, how cute. That's so cute. There was moments of sadness, though, in that message, weren't there?
Yes, and also answered your question about siblings, because that's something we talked about last week. So
yes,
these TCK adults, what do their siblings feel, or how do their siblings react?
Her brother's obviously more than keen to stay, but I think too, I wonder if that's because he finished that little bit earlier, because she was saying she was involved in the discussion about going back to Egypt. And is that it? Is that, you know, she became part of that move and started to entertain those ideas. So was, you know, into that thought process of moving earlier. I don't know.
And pretty hardcore to move back for your last year of school.
Very hardcore. Very hardcore. And obviously all worked out okay because she's managed to get through a university degree.
Yes.
Yeah, so what do you reckon the chances are of her becoming an expat as an adult?
Yes.
I'm thinking about 99%.
I'd put money on that. Anyway, so that comes to the end of our amazing listening tour of adult TCKs. I think we covered a pretty good cross-section.
It was brilliant. That was so, so good. Loved it. Really, really. And big, big fat thank you to everyone who took the time, because I know a lot of people it was a pain having to come and leave the message because they weren't happy with the sound of their own voice, which we can totally understand and identify with, can't we?
No one is ever happy with the sound of their own voice.
Okay, so Nikki, tell me what you have been listening to, watching, reading this week. Podcasts. Have you found a podcast this week?
Podcasts. So this week I was looking at storytelling. So we're talking about our upcoming Big Fat Expat meetups and having people share stories. So I was looking for sort of resources about that, and I came across The Moth. Have you listened to The Moth?
Yes.
The Moth Radio Hour. Yeah. So story, and they also have story slams on YouTube.
Yes.
So I spent hours and hours down the moth hole.
Can you remember that in Girls? Hannah goes off and she does storytelling at Moth. I reckon that's in about the last episode of season 5.
Oh, no, no, I'm not a girls. I'm not a girls fan. I mean, I haven't watched Girls as much as you have. I think what I learned is that so many people have a story to share, and everyone has something that with a little bit of thought can be shared in an entertaining and meaningful way. So, you know, if you think you don't have a story, I think if you sit down and think about it, you probably do have a story that will be fun for people to share. I listened to a really great one just yesterday, actually, because I'm still on the jam, about a guy who went through various kitchen and restaurant jobs and then went home to his family farm and started a restaurant. And that farm happened to be in Martha's Vineyard.
Oh, my God.
And he tells a story about the night the president and his wife came to dinner at their restaurant.
Oh.
And it's just so cool. And, you know, he just talks about how, you know, when they all got in there, the Secret Service wouldn't let anyone in and out while the president was there, which is probably fair enough. He said that one of the kids had this look on his face, which indicated he was probably stoned. You're one of the people working in the restaurant. So he was panicking. And it just, and how the girl that served the entree, she was 16 and she made the salad and then took it out to the president. And it was just a really great story. And, you know, he's just the guy who runs a restaurant. Yeah.
And which president was it? Was it Obama?
It was Obama, yes. Oh. It was a recent one.
Oh, good. That sounds good. And yes, everyone does have a story. And we should think about that for our upcoming storytelling night in Shanghai on May the 13th. If we have listeners in Shanghai, start thinking about your storytelling and if you'd like to be part of it, because you're right, Nikki, everyone has a story.
And if you want some ideas, you can listen to the Moth podcast.
Yes.
And one other podcast I listened to this week, which I'm sure everybody listened to, was Mad World, which is a new podcast, a 10-part series podcast by The Telegraph in the UK on mental health. Mm-hmm. And the first guest was Prince Harry.
So,
royal on a podcast. All the podcast groups I belong to say, oh, this must be a world first, a royal on a podcast. And he spoke about the mental health challenges he faced over his life, and in particular in relation to the death of his mother. He also mentioned speaking to psychologists about their mental health. And there's a ratio of problems to relaxation and blowing off steam that they have to do as well. So they can only listen to so many hours of, I mean, it's only recommended you listen to so many hours of people's problems before you have to then take a break and do exercise or have your own sort of mental break, because it's great to listen and help people and take, but a little bit of it comes into you as well, apparently. So you take on their problems a little bit much. So it was actually really interesting. I listened to it just for the fame factor, I guess, but it came off really well. So I enjoyed that as well. So that's Mad World. So I'll put that up as well.
Do you know, that's a really interesting point for mothers, because I think, you know, mothers of toddlers and tweens, you are constantly listening to the whining and whinging of others. But I was thinking with teenagers too, you almost become a personal cheerleader. And it does feel like you're constantly either worrying about other people's problems or listening to their problems or think problem solving. So yes, that's a very good point that you need to take a break away from that. Yeah, whether you're a professional psychologist or an amateur.
And that's right. And that's why you should always plan things. So plan your life to have the breaks you want. For example, if you lived in Shanghai and wanted to come to the Big Fat Expat meetup on May the 13th and plan a break to hang out with some like-minded fun people.
Yes. Okay. So for me, for podcasts this week, is my boss actually put me onto this one, Recode Decode. And it was actually not so much the podcast itself, but a particular episode, which was called How You Get Addicted to Apps. And the interviewee in this was a guy called Tristan Harris, and he has a website called Time Well Spent. So you go to www.timewellspent.io, and he's a fascinating guy. It will, once you go down this path, it'll be that same rabbit warren where you
rabbit hole,
you, which is kind of funny seeing it's time well spent. But the whole idea behind it is Tristan was previously a design ethicist at Google. And when, if you're sitting there going, what on earth would that be? It is at places like Google and Apple and whatever, they employ, you know, hundreds and thousands of people that are, some are trying to, you know, just keep you on their app and keep you on their website and doing whatever. And his whole point is, what are we doing to people when we're doing this about, and that's the whole idea of time well spent.
And so do they also employ people to stop that happening?
Well, this is that- Yes, and this was his issue, is that he'd be sitting in these rooms and people would be saying, you know, well, how do we do a push notification and how do we do this and how do we do that? Because all of these apps and sites were judged on how long you could get people to stay on them. And he kept asking the question, is this really the right thing that we want to be doing? Do we really want to judge ourselves by how long? And he was saying, an example of people that don't judge themselves in that way is the couch surfing app, is they don't judge themselves by how many connections they've made. They judge themselves by how long the people who end up spending the time together choose to spend time together. That to them is the success, that someone couch surfed and had a great relationship with someone and enjoyed their company and it was a win, not that, oh, we got 10 people on couches tonight. It's a whole different way. So like a dating site wouldn't be that you had 25 matches. It would be that you had two great matches. Do you know?
Dates. Right?
Yes.
Dates.
Yes. Yeah. So the idea behind Time Well Spent is that it aims to transform the race for attention by revealing how technology hijacks our minds. There was a stat in one of his interviews I saw that said that the average person checks their phone 150 times a day.
That actually makes me feel better. I know that sounds bad, but it does make me feel better.
Yeah, and he wants to look at better incentives and design practices that make us spend our time better. So he's currently developing a framework for what he calls ethical persuasion and as it relates to the moral responsibility of technological companies. So I think one of the things I thought was really interesting was he said, and when you talk about ethical persuasion, he said McDonald's didn't have salads until the consumers demanded it. And he said we're now entering this age where we're all constantly looking at our phones and we're spending time on our phones, and it's up to us now as the consumers to demand that this stuff be better, that we don't get sucked into these holes of doing it. It was really, really interesting. He said, rather than technology being driven by time spent, we should aim to live in a world that is time well spent. So I just thought it was really interesting. There's also a TED Talk, which I'll link to, and a number of essays that he's written, but fascinating stuff. And he talked about, and I'd never heard of this phrase, of being a behavioural economist. Have you heard of this, Dickie?
Yes, I have. Because I studied economics at university.
But did you study behavioural economics?
No, I didn't study behavioural economics, but it's much more interesting than regular economics.
Yes. Well, this is what I'm thinking, because, you know, another one of these moments where I'm sending myself down another career path, retraining. Anyway, so that's me for podcasts. Okay, what are you watching on the telly?
Well, I haven't watched anything new because we were away and I haven't been watching much, but Scandal is one of my favourite shows. I don't know if you watch it. And the last couple of weeks ago, I was watching it and I was like, okay, this is it. I'm done. this show has jumped the shark. This storyline is just gone down a track that I cannot get on board with. And I thought, I just watched the end of the episode and then I'm prepared to walk away. And the last 30 seconds of the episode sucked me back in. And so I was just wondering, is there any shows that you have done that you like, you're a loyal watcher, and then you get to a stage and you're like, oh, okay, I'm done. I'm going to walk away. Because I'm not good at doing that. I keep going back.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was a loyal watcher of Downton Abbey and then left it series. Yeah.
What?
I know. And I don't think I've ever gone back and actually watched the true ending of Downton Abbey. I know. I know.
It's so hard to believe that we're friends.
And it was one of those ones that I loved and watched in great succession, and then, yeah, just sort of missed it. I left House of Cards and came back to it. They lagged a bit in the middle, and I've just started watching season 6 of Girls, and I loved probably the first season of Girls, went off of it. And now that I'm watching this last season, and I'd love to talk to someone, maybe I'm going to have to make you watch it this week, because all the last season has just dropped, so you can watch it, because there's going to be a lot of discussion about it. But I've watched the first 5 episodes, I think, and have really enjoyed it. And I did notice that Mrs. Woog from Woog's World, she posted last night saying she was about to watch the last episode of season 6 and that she'd heard it was a bit meh. And I was like, oh, okay. But so far I'm really loving the change in them, because we've talked before about Girls and how
Yes. It's
so, you know, so much talking about yourself, much introspection, so much, you know, whatever. But I think it really shows these girls turning into women. Yeah. I think it's I think it's been really interesting and a lot of thought provoking stuff. Okay. So for me, for television, I guess it's been that. And also I've been really looking forward to, there's a television show on the ABC called You Can't Ask That. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen that because I'm behind in my Australian television because I don't have a viewing apparatus.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So You Can't Ask That is sort of these short little snippets, and they've had all sorts of different people, whether it's been people of a different race or disability or what else has there been? I'm trying to think, or profession, where people, they've been given open slather, like, so they get the questions on a paper, so that it's not as confrontational as having one person look someone in the eye, but they just get the question. And the lovely Carly Finlay Morrow, who I really love, and she writes a lot about appearance activism and
amazing, and has a great podcast too.
Yes. And the question asked is, what's wrong with you? And I've only seen the preview of a couple of minutes, but she totally rocks it. It is really, really good. I swear that girl's got a career in television coming her way, because she's very, very good on camera. And, you know,
excellent.
Yeah. So,
well, I'll try and work out how I can watch it.
Yes. Social media, what have you had anything pop up in your feed?
No, I haven't. Although I watched a quick thing last night about an 80-something-year-old woman in Japan who runs a Chinese restaurant and then is a DJ once a week at night, and all these millennials turn up. And I'll look for it and I'll put the link in. But I was like, that's kind of cool. So it's very sweet. She kind of uses all this techno music and she puts jazz over it and classical music over it. And they were interviewing the kids who were dancing and saying, you know, it's a whole different sound and we really like it. And it's kind of cool.
Now, I found something in the New Yorker. It's 5 short dark comedies about smartphone obsession, and it's called 5 Films About Technology. Now, I'll put the link to the New Yorker there, but you might find, depending on where you are in the world, it might tell you that you can't view it, but Don't Panic. It's on YouTube. And Five Films About Technology is fantastic. Director is from Toronto, Peter, I don't know how to say this, I think it's Hung, it's H-U-A-N-G, and it's just 4.5 minutes of these very witty little moments involving smartphones and the embarrassment that they can occur. My favourite being, and they all tie in together, like one leads to the next. Now, I've watched the 4.5 minutes and instantly wanted more because it's so well acted and produced and done that you're like, oh, no, 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 I want more of this. This is too short. But I have heard that he is going to extend it.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Okay, well, I'll definitely be looking that up.
Okay.
Okay, we also had two new iTunes reviews this week.
Oh.
Some of our favourite things to read, talking about reading on the internet. Danielle from Singapore, from Australia, said, fabulous, a guiding light. I absolutely love this podcast, as warm and soothing as a cup of tea, but filled with all the fun and laughs of a G&T shared with great friends. A guiding light to all expats. Danielle, we love you.
We do.
And the other one came from someone in the UAE, A Data. It took a while to hop onto the Two Fat Expats train, but now not planning to hop off. Been binging to catch up to the current episode. Listening to you ladies makes my commutes and work days whiz by. I'm an expat lifer, and I love the insights and anecdotes to all the variations of expat life out there. Look forward to future episodes. Bit sad to have finished binging. I'm always sad when I finish binging, yeah, too, on podcasts.
Me too.
We also had a message this week on our SpeakPipe message, a voice message, which you can access, of course, by going to www.truefatexpats.com. And it's this little thing on the side that says, hi, leave a message, and you just press it and speak, and it comes to us. It's like magic. Anyway, it was a lovely message from a lady saying that she was really enjoying the podcast, and as a family, they were facing some difficult decisions coming up. So it was great to have the podcast to listen to for a little bit of advice and humour, which I thought was very nice.
Nice one.
Because that's what we're aiming for, right?
Yes, this is what we want. We want to make your
expert a little bit of advice.
A little bit of giggles. Lots of giggles. I'm determined there are going to be more giggles, less serious.
Well, let's balance it.
So we are back next week. I am obviously off to Dubai this weekend. We've now got the baseball tournament, had the softball tournament last week. Now we've got the baseball tournament. But the beautiful thing is I have all my children all in the one place and my husband, and we are going to spend the next, you know, sort of weekend in Dubai together, which I cannot tell you how good that feels.
And it will feel even better because you'll be staying at the lovely, lovely Shangri-La Dubai.
Yes, I know. I can't wait. And we're staying in an apartment because the Shangri-La Dubai has 3-bedroom apartments, which for a family with 4 children is absolutely perfect. Or else we end up in the, you know, definitely more than one hotel room always and squished into 2. So this is perfect. But I will take lots and lots of pictures and maybe do a Facebook Live to share with everyone, and everyone can have a look. But, yeah, cannot wait.
Okay, well, have a great time, and I'll speak to you next week.
Okay, bye.